20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers Nation? Happy Sunday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Hope your weekend's going great. Thanks so much for taking some time out of your day to join us here on the show. Always appreciate that a ton. Packers rookie minicamp now officially done. It's just like we check these things off. The draft is done. Rookie minicamp is done. Now we're going to get to minicamps and OTAs, and everything's just going to go so fast. Such is life. But we've got a lot to go over today. We're going to go a little bit over the rookie minicamp. There weren't a ton of key takeaways or things like that, but we'll go over a couple news and notes and items from the rookie minicamp in and of itself. And then today is going to be the breakdown of Warren Brinson. I really liked my study of Warren Brinson. We're going to get into that in just a moment, so definitely stick around for that as well. Let's start with rookie minicamp. Let's first go over, I should note, you know, of course, the rookies are there, all of the draft picks, all of the undrafted free agents that they just signed the other day were there, but you had some other players, some tryout players, and then some players that were eligible first-year players as well. So from a tryout standpoint, they had, like 10 to 12 guys in. They had kicker Gavin Stewart out of Georgia Southern, quarterback Taylor Algersma, out of Canada. We talked about him quite a bit. Justice Mosqueda and I talked about him a while ago. He was just drafted 18th overall in the CFL draft. He's going to have a workout next week with Buffalo. He's been somebody that was in for a top 30 visit with Green Bay. He's probably the most notable of the tryout players. Punter Brendan Hall out of Montana State. Wide receiver Jack Studer out of Wisconsin La Crosse. Linebacker Xander Mueller out of Northwestern. Linebacker Luke Gunderson out of Northern State. Linebacker Connor Shea out of Wyoming. Defensive lineman Van Fillinger out of Utah. Long snapper Gage King out of Central Florida. Wide receiver Jaden Smith out of Nevada. And wide receiver Allie Jennings out of Virginia Tech. Those were your tryout players. We'll see in the next couple of days if Green Bay does take a chance on one of those players and bring them on the active roster. Usually they sign about two or three of those guys. Nothing's guaranteed. One of the things that was really interesting that I think it was Wes Hotkovitz brought up as we were chatting today. And, you know, we'll talk about this mini camp in just a moment. It was very nondescript. There wasn't much going on. It was, I wouldn't even say walkthrough pace. It was just very educational, informational. And Matt yesterday, or on this case on Friday, was asked of like how different it is now than when he first became head coach. And when he first became head coach, he joked, he's like, yeah, we had garbage cans. Guys were throwing up. They used to do 11 on 11s at rookie mini camp. Just now it's just, again, teaching. And there's really no, I mean, even when they were going through drills, there wasn't even like the receivers were going through the drills. It was snail's pace, but there wasn't even a football being thrown to them. And what Wes brought up is how is one of these tryout players, are you supposed to go about making the team? You don't even have an opportunity to really show yourself, which is kind of crazy. Now you get some individual walkthrough. You get to understand the person, how they tick, again, the personality, how they respond to coaching. There's certainly some things that you can glean from it. And I'm sure these guys are so good at what they do that you can kind of tell the upside, the talent, and some of those things, just even getting them on the football field a little bit. But man, is it a whole heck of a lot different than what it used to be when you actually had competitive periods at these tryout days and rookie mini camps. So just interesting to see if any of these guys do actually get a chance, because they really don't get a huge opportunity to kind of go and prove themselves at whatever, you know, it's not even really a competitive practice, just again, more of a teaching walkthrough kind of situation. But those were your tryout players. You had some eligible first-year players that were at camp as or at practice as well. Kalen King, Kamal Haddon, Caleb Hayes, all three of those are corners. Tight end Johnny Lumpkin, defensive end Deslin Alexander, defensive end Jeremiah Martin, defensive tackle Keith Randolph, offensive lineman Donovan Jennings, and defensive tackle James Ester. They were all eligible for the rookie minicamp or the minicamp, however you want to view it, since these guys aren't rookies, and they were all there in attendance. However, Kalen King and Kamal Haddon were not practicing. They were off to the side. I'm not sure if it was just because they wanted to more focus on some of these other guys, and those guys obviously practiced quite a bit with the team last year, or if there was an injury issue, that we don't know. Certainly Green Bay needs as much depth as they can possibly have at that corner room right now. So hopefully there's no issues with Kalen King or Kamal Haddon, but it was a little bit noteworthy nonetheless that those two did not participate in the rookie minicamp itself, at least the practice portion. All right, let's go over what some key takeaways were from that actual minicamp itself. As mentioned, the first thing that was noteworthy is just the pace. this was, again, very slow, very methodical. It was more of just, you know, even the receivers, right? So much time was just spent on sort of elementary footwork stuff, and not elementary, but, you know, utilizing that time to go over what Green Bay is looking for in certain situations, certain instances. The footwork on the route running was an example of that, but that was all the kind of stuff that they were working on. One thing of note, and I won't name names here or anything like that, and technically we're not allowed to go over like any sort of quotes that coaches say or anything like that, but I'll just give you a vague example. There was a player, a rookie, who was going through just some of the kind of like the warm-ups, right? And as he was doing one of them, he kind of sprinted it out. And Matt was pretty upset by it because he didn't want anyone going that hard in this practice. Because again, I think they're trying to ramp these players up and they don't want a hamstring or an ACL. These guys have all been traveling a ton, going on top 30 visits, draft stuff. Like they've all been through the ringer. So I don't think he wanted these guys to come in and be sprinting and trying to do too much. So he was, you know, he was on this player and saying like, hey, it happens again, you're out of practice. Like, and the beautiful thing here is I think sometimes, you know, Matt's a player coach. I've said this multiple times before. If you're not doing something the way that Matt wants you to do it, he's going to get after you. He's like, he will become that guy if he needs to become that guy. And in this, Matt was totally in the right with everything he was doing. So just again, interesting to see, you know, just Matt, you know, kind of lay down the law a little bit, but also just, you know, again, it was all in the best interest of his players. He just didn't want anyone to like overextend themselves and get hurt in this situation. And also set the tone of like, hey, when I say something, do it the right way. So that was, again, just to kind of give you an indication of what Matt wanted to accomplish. It was more teaching and less anything all out athletic or anything like that. As I mentioned, Kalen King and Kamal Haddon were not practicing. If you did get one look at a player on this particular day, it was probably Taylor Algersma. There were certain areas where we could go to and Algersma was right in front of us for a decent portion of it. And also he was going through some of the quarterback drills that Jordan Love and in the past Aaron Rodgers and all these guys have gone through in the past. And you can kind of get a feel for just who they are as a quarterback. I'll just say I was impressed. I was very impressed with Algersma, just how he kind of went through everything, how he took to coaching, his professionalism. And it also felt like Matt and Sean Mannion and just it felt like they were putting some time into him. Now he's again set for a mini camp tryout or a rookie mini camp tryout next week with Buffalo. We'll see if Green Bay lets him get to that. We'll see if maybe Green Bay tries to pick him up as that fourth quarterback. I would not be surprised. This is all who the heck knows territory. You know, maybe they loved him. Maybe they want nothing to do with him. Who the heck knows? But just based on what I saw, it wouldn't stun me if they wanted to get him in as that number four quarterback. They need one. There was no other quarterback in for a tryout. And I don't know what else they'd potentially be looking for right now. It's not like they're going to find a, you know, a different young quarterback at this stage to kind of bring in. So I liked what I saw. I think he can come in and compete with Sean Clifford legitimately. So we'll see if they do something there, but I was impressed by what I saw. By the way, Matt LaFleur said in his press conference that Taylor Algersma has a live arm. And that's a very common NFL terminology. It's also used in baseball. And I saw a couple people be like, what the heck does it mean to have a live arm? And I didn't think much of it or whatever. And then I tweeted today, like, I can confirm, you know, very live arm, looks great, etc. And then once again, at least one in my responses, like, what the heck does it mean to have a live arm? It just means that you've got how Daniel Jeremiah usually defines just the arm strength is like easy gas. Like it's just a really easy throwing motion and it kind of explodes out of your hand. Like your arm is really good. It pops and there's no, you know, extra exerted effort to try to get the speed on the ball that you need or the RPMs. It's just natural, easy, explodes out of your hand and it's got some pop to it. That's having a live arm. How I kind of think of it in my weird mind is like when you have a live wire, right? It's live, it's electric, it's on, you've got a live wire. I kind of like feel like you have a live arm. It's electric. It's on. It's good. Like you're that current's running through it. It's in a good spot. So live arm is a good thing. Doesn't mean that it's actually alive or any, I mean, whatever. It's a live arm. It pops, easy gas, however you want to define it, but it's a good thing. And he has a live arm. I can confirm. I saw it in person and he wasn't even going full out. It definitely popped out of his hands. And there was a, you know, it was impressive. Tight spiral, everything he wanted. There's one throw that was a little inaccurate, whatever. It's not a big deal. But I would take a flyer on him if I were Green Bay. That was kind of the biggest takeaway you could have. I thought Micah Robinson just looked natural in his backpedal and some of the things that he was doing in his drills. Again, take that for what it's worth. There's no pads here. They're going through it at, again, very, very slow paced. I love in these situations just being able to see the coach's coach. And sometimes we don't always get to hear that. And in this instance, we could hear it really, really well. There's so few players out there and you could actually see what they were emphasizing. So just getting to see Ben Sermons close up, coaching the couple running backs that were there, Sean Mannion working with El Guersma, Matt LaFleur getting all over the place and working on some, you know, teaching technique stuff. That stuff I loved. And that was kind of the cool aspect of the practice. Also, Brendan Hall, the tryout punter that I mentioned, 6'9". 6'9" tryout punter. He was mammoth, just a huge punter. We didn't get to see him punt at all, so I don't know if he's any good, but a 6'9" punter that they brought in for tryouts. Very interesting player. Literally nothing that you really need to know outside of anything that we just discussed. I joked, like, I think it was with Paul Bredel. So like, this could have been an email. Like there wasn't a ton going on. I was maybe complaining a little bit about like, hey, they're not opening up these practices. Like there used to be two, what's going on? I get it. Like even that one, you probably could have sent like just one of the beat writers and said, hey, just take notes for 20 minutes and let us know who practiced, who didn't, and any notes that you have. And that probably would have been plenty. There just really wasn't much going on. It was cool to see Matthew Golden and, you know, Savion Williams and some of those guys in person. All the rookie draft picks were actually practicing. So that's a good sign as well. None of them were out with an injury, which again, you would hate to see as they come in, but overall, those were kind of the key takeaways. Nothing super crazy, nothing that you need to really take away from this, but just a couple notes that I figured I would get out there since I did attend practice and we had at least a couple things that we learned from it. All right, let's get into Warren Brinson, defensive tackle out of the University of Georgia. For those of you who know me or have been around for these deep dives, I'll be very transparent. I was like, if you remember last year, Tyron Hopper, I had a lot of, you know, things that I thought on tape did not look great. And I was very transparent about those. If I'm, you know, excited about certain traits or certain aspects, I will tell you very much about those as well. This is not meant to lead one way or the other. Just tell you what he is, who he, you know, what he's done in college, you know, some of the traits, PFF grades, and then what I saw on tape from a positive standpoint, what I saw on tape from a negative standpoint. I am going to try my best to stay even keeled on this one because I really enjoyed his tape. As I mentioned yesterday, this is the player that going into the deep dive was the player that I had the opportunity to view the least. So I was kind of going in with a little bit of a blank slate. I watched him obviously before I did the day three review. I was able to watch a couple games of him, but I didn't get the opportunity to kind of dig deep into him. And this was the opportunity to do so. And, you know, there was some stuff where I originally watched that I thought was maybe a little bit more pedestrian. And the more I watched him, the more impressed I became with who he can potentially be as a player. Now, the reason I'm trying to stay even keeled isn't necessarily just to be like, here's some good things, here's some bad things. It's more of because he's a 6th round pick. The very strong likelihood for any 6th round pick is it's just that they suck. Like, not suck, you know what I mean? Like, they just don't turn out. Like, if there's, what, 46th round picks, like, you know, if you get 3 or 4 of those guys that go on to have good NFL careers, that's probably on the higher side, right? So if you want to make a prediction, your prediction should be that he's just not going to be very good. And you're probably going to be right the vast majority of the time. But I will say, going through him and watching his tape in greater detail and going through for, you know, the entirety of his time at Georgia, there are players that Green Bay has drafted at defensive tackle in the 2nd and 3rd rounds. Guys like Jarrell Worthy and Kyree Thornton that I liked less than the tape from Brinson. You might be saying, well, yeah, of course, those guys sucked. I'm talking about when I watched them in college. Like when I watched them in college, just the draft evaluation of those players compared to Brinson, I like Brinson better. They got him in the 6th round. Worthy was a 2nd rounder. Kyree Thornton was a 3rd rounder. And there are others too. You know, we could go, you know, Christian Ringo. We could go Kingsley Keke. We could go James Looney in the 7th round. Jonathan Ford in the 7th round. We could go on and on. You know, their 4th round pick from a couple of years ago, who's on their defensive line right now, whose name is escaping me at the moment, but Colby Wooden. even Colby Wooden. I like Brinson's tape way more than I liked Colby Wooden's coming out of college. And Wooden was a fourth round pick for Green Bay. So I'm very excited that they got him in the sixth round. What he becomes, that is still his journey, his destiny. We'll kind of wait and see. But there's a lot to like about what is out there on tape. And we're going to go over it right now. 6'5", 315, defensive tackle, again, out of the University of Georgia. Just another Georgia player in Green Bay. He spent his entire time at Georgia. No transfers, no nothing like that. Is a fifth-year senior. Just turned 23 in February, so not overaged or anything. Will be 23 throughout the entirety of the season. Unless they make a Super Bowl, then I'd have to look at the day that he was born on. But he'll turn 24 next February. He was 254th on the consensus big board. And you might be saying, like, Andy, you seem very excited for a guy that was drafted in the sixth round. He was 254th in the consensus big board. There wasn't a ton of buzz when they drafted him. Like, what's going on here? I think a couple things. I think number one, you have sort of this, comparison at the University of Georgia, because you've, you know, had all of Jalen Carters and Jordan Davis's and all these unbelievable defensive tackles and defensive linemen, Michael Williams and Nolan Smith, and all these, you've got all these unbelievable players at Georgia for the last 4 years, Devontae Wyatt, et cetera. Like, you have sort of this unbelievable competition there and this sort of baseline. And I think he got lost in the shuffle a little bit, because you've had all these other unbelievable Georgia defensive players that, you know, for him, I just think he kind of went a little bit under the radar. And then add on top of that, you have a defensive tackle class that was just absurd. It was considered arguably the deepest class of any position in this draft. And you're going to have some guys that ultimately fall further than they normally would. And to me, Brinson is exactly that. He's a player that I think got a little bit overlooked because of some of the other players that have played at Georgia. And I think he just went a little bit later than he normally would because of all the great defensive tackles in this draft. So I do think they found a bit of a gem here in Brinson. And I do think that's why he fell a little bit further. It wasn't as much on people's radar. And I think Green Bay found a steal. From an athletic standpoint, 9.10 relative athletic score. He did not do the three cone. 96th percentile in height, 84th percentile weight, 70th percentile in the bench press, 81st percentile in the vertical jump, 95th percentile in the broad jump, 65th percentile in the 40-yard dash, 49th percentile in the 10-yard split, 66th percentile in the short shuttle, 63rd percentile arm length, 65th percentile wingspan, and 80th percentile hand size. And the only thing under 50% was the 10-yard split, and that was at 49%, and he still hit the 40 at the 65th percentile. I mean, he really did well on pretty much all the testing and kind of checked all those boxes. And he's just a very good athlete. You watch him on tape. He's a very good athlete that looks every part of the 91st percentile at defensive tackle that he is, that he tested as. It carries over, which is always what you want to see. Some athletic comps for him for the relative athletic score site: Chris Jenkins, the defensive tackle, Nathan Shepard, and then Devon Still. But obviously Chris Jenkins, the big one there. And then for mock draftable, TJ Sanders, who went in the second round of this draft, Nathan Shepard, who was a third rounder, I want to say like a handful of years ago, Marcus Stroud, the old defensive tackle. I think he was out of Georgia too, if I remember correctly. Ty Warren, and then Gerald McCoy. So those were some of the athletic comps for Brinson. For PFF, he had a 67.7 grade on 150 snaps in 2021. In 2022, had a 72.3 grade on 272 snaps. In 2023, a 79.2 grade on 329 snaps. And in 2024, a 78.6 grade on 444 snaps. So every year he played more: 150, 272, 329, and 444, and almost improved every year: 67.7, 72.3, 79.2, just a slight step back to a 78.6 in his final season. But he played a lot more, so kind of makes a little bit of sense there as well. In 2021, he had 91 pass rush snaps, had one sack, 10 pressures, a 6.6% win rate, and 11.0% pressure percentage. In 2022, had 168 pass rush snaps, one sack, 18 pressures, a 14.9% win rate, and a 10.7% pressure percentage. In 2023, 186 pass rush snaps, two sacks, 22 pressures, 12.9% win rate, and 11.8% pressure percentage. And this past year, 259 pass rush snaps, three sacks, 22 pressures, a 12.7% win rate, and an 8.5% pressure percentage. Had 144 special team snaps in his career. 102 of those were on field goal block, but did have 25 on the punt return unit as well. Some notes, he was offered and accepted his invite to the East-West Shrine Game and played there. Missed two games in 2024 with a left ankle injury. Is a known podcaster and wants to work for ESPN someday. Let's just take it easy, Brinson. You've got your football gig already. I don't need any more competition in the podcast space. So maybe just chill for a bit. If you want to come on the podcast, maybe we can work together. But you know, we don't need any more competition out there. You go do your football. I think it's really important that he really focuses in on the football aspect right now. Doesn't need to work on all that off-field stuff. That can wait till later. Right now, really needs to hone in on football. So, no podcasting right now, Warren. We've got that taken care of. But no, he's got a great, you know, larger than life personality that came through in his locker room availabilities, and again wants to work for ESPN someday and has that very large personality, which you love to see. And again, is currently a podcaster. So maybe some fun stuff coming out of that. Strengths. He has a fantastic body with great athleticism and immediately looks the part. If you want to like just look NFL caliber defensive lineman, man, Warren Brinson fits the billing, and he looks every bit of what you've seen from some of these top. Now, he's not Jordan Davis. That's a different type of human being, right? But he looks like one of these top Georgia defensive tackle guys when you look at him. So you always want somebody that, you know, you can kind of just pass the eye test on. Warren Brinson passes the eye test. Here's the big thing for me. There were multiple plays. I posted a couple of these on Twitter where he held up unbelievably well against double teams. There's some inconsistency there. There's a couple other times where he gets, you know, knocked off the ball or whatever. But man, I saw this guy be able to really anchor and fight off double teams. I saw him split double teams. I saw him hold up against the point of attack on both of them and then shed and get to the running back. Like, he's got some really special stuff on tape when it comes to being able to stop the run and hold up at the point of attack, even when going against two big time offensive linemen or two big offensive linemen. That to me was ultra impressive. And if he can continue to show that and hone those skills, he can become a really, really good run defender in the NFL. So there was definite upside there. If you're kind of, you know, scouting to the peaks of the potential, what I saw him do in some of those plays in run defense was really, really impressive and gave me a lot of hope that he could really develop into a really impressive run defender in the NFL. He's got versatility. He can line up as a nose tackle, as a three technique. You could line him up as a 3-4 defensive end. You can even do a little bit of stuff with him on the outside as well as like a 4-3 defensive end and some twists and stunts, or even just kind of have him bull rush from the outside. So he's got some good versatility along the defensive line. Very active player, does not give up even if blocked or double teamed. He continues to work and try to work his way to the quarterback. It's usually a little bit more of a slow burn, but he continues to work at it, doesn't give up on a play. As I mentioned, twists and stunts are something he does pretty well at. He moves extremely well for his size. Has great upper body strength. This, again, runs a little bit hot and cold where sometimes it doesn't quite show out as much, but man, there are plays where he's throwing people around. He's stacking and shedding, like just some big time power stuff when he wants to. And I'm not exactly sure why it maybe wasn't a little bit more consistent, but clearly saw it on tape on numerous occasions and think that is legitimately something that he can bring to the NFL level. He has an arm over move and a double hand swipe. So again, arm over, swim move, whatever you want to call it, gets past that first guy. There's one play on tape that maybe his most impressive one. I was going to clip it, but there's like the goalpost flag that was waving in the way. But he does an arm over move on the guard, I think it was. It was either the center or the guard. Does it on one of them, gets through immediately, like gets to, like immediately there's a second guy ready for him. And in like one motion, where he gets arm over, beats the guy, then immediately beats the other guy. Like, I don't even know how he knew he was there, but I anticipated the double team, got off the first guy, got off the second guy, phrasing, and then, you know, he immediately was able to get to the quarterback after that. Like, how he was able to get that second guy to the point where he knew he was there and was able to anticipate it and have them move ready. So he barely gets out of the first move, and the guy's there waiting for him. And then he had an immediate second move ready for that guy and then was able to get to the quarterback. So just, again, some unbelievable movement stuff. And he's got some moves at his disposal as well. And just kind of, again, like what he brings to the table. Here's another one. I saw on numerous occasions that despite him being a 6'5", which by the way, when you're at 96th percentile height at defensive tackle, one of the things that I pretty much could write down in the negatives is plays too high. It's just a natural thing. Up 6'5", plays too high, too much of his chest is exposed. You just almost put it in the negatives without even looking at the tape, and you're probably going to be right. Here's the thing. For his size, he really has the ability to stay remarkably low and win with leverage. There's a play that I clipped too where the center comes at him to move him. So it's a run play, and the center comes at him to move him off his spot. And he gets low, arm up on the center, and anchors. And when I say he's anchored, he doesn't budge a millimeter. Center coming at him, 300-pound guy. His job is to move him off that spot. And I crap you not, he didn't move one iota. Just planted himself, got low, strong arm, and the center could not move him a millimeter. And after that, stays at the line of scrimmage, holds up at the point of attack, running back tries to come in the gap next to him, disengages, goes and makes the play on the running back. Those are the sort of things that you see on tape from him that are really, really impressive. Now, again, you're not seeing these plays constantly. I'm not saying that these are showing up every other player, things like that. But when you're taking a guy in the sixth round, you're looking at the peaks. You're looking at what he can potentially bring to the table and what he's already put on tape. And man, some of the stuff that he is putting on tape is really ridiculously good for a sixth round pick. And again, I'm very excited about what he can potentially bring to the table. Rallies to the football. Here's what I was kind of saying on that last play. He's got the ability to grow roots. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you're obviously, if you're a tree, you got your roots in the ground and you're not movable, right? Because those roots are anchoring you there. He has the ability to just get to a spot, grow those roots, anchor, and then he's not moving anywhere. And he did it against double teams. He did it against single team or just one-on-one. And it's really impressive. And that's exactly what Green Bay needs as kind of that backup to Kenny Clark, is somebody who can come in and be a really good run defender. Now, I thought in 2024, and we'll talk about this in the negatives, where it maybe wasn't quite as consistent. I thought I saw it a little bit more in 22 and 23, but the high-end run defense stuff is really prevalent and has the ability to be pretty special if he can just cultivate it and make it a little bit more consistent within his game. Rallies to the football, has really good balance. Rarely see him get overextended or kind of lean forward. Even when he does, like even if he gets off balance for a second, he has the wherewithal to regain his balance. And you rarely see him get tripped up or anything like that. So he's really good balance at the position, good first step quickness. And then he has the ability to stay square and move laterally down the line of scrimmage. So as you're kind of moving down that line, if it's like a, think of like an outside stretch play where that running back's looking for those cutback lanes, you know, he's just kind of moving right down the line, sticking with it and making sure that he's clogging everything up as best as he can. But that lateral agility definitely shows up in that situation. From a weakness standpoint, there's not a ton. I got six on my list here. Finishing was a problem at times. I would have liked to have seen him make some of those plays where he gets into the backfield and just finish with sacks or tackles for loss, some missed tackles, and just that lack of kind of closing explosion, which he's a 300 some pound, 6'5 defensive tackle. You're most likely not going to have that. But there were a couple plays where I just wish he had a little bit more of that juice to kind of make that final play, get to the quarterback and bring him to the ground. But he's causing that chaos, which is still important. And I do still think that he has the ability to even finish better. But it, you know, again, closing speed, whatever you want to call it, for a defensive tackle like this, it's going to be a tough thing to come by. Only the rarest of the rare usually have it. He does not, but he's got good quickness nonetheless. Struggled, again, more to hold up against double teams in 2024. He's not going to be a big-time pass rush asset, at least not as of now. Maybe that's something that can continue to develop, but he's an impressive pass rusher considering his size and what he can do as a run defender. But is he ever going to be this like 10 sack guy? No, I don't think there's anything like that in the cards for him, but he does have a little bit of juice. He can get in the backfield. He can gather some sacks. And I do think his potential as a pass rusher is still much better than most sort of run stopping defensive tackles that you're going to get either free agency, draft, etc. He's got a little bit more of that juice than you would expect for somebody that he, you know, that can stop the run the way that he can usually has. There is some inconsistency in his tape. There's no question about it. He's got to just become a more consistent player overall. He also hasn't had to play a ton of snaps in his career. He's been a rotational defensive lineman, and you know, you're usually looking at, you know, 15, 20, 25 snaps per game. Hasn't had to play the 50, 60 snaps per game. You know, he shouldn't have to do that in the NFL either, especially coming out as a rookie. But it is worth noting that he hasn't played a ton of snaps in college, and he has been able to be that rotational guy, which keeps him fresh and is just kind of naturally going to make that tape look a little bit better because he's not having to play, you know, 10, 12, 15 snaps in a row or, you know, go long stretches without a rest. He's usually well rested and he's getting those opportunities to come out of the game and then come back in fresh. Last but not least, not a ton of production. So, you know, solid, you know, traits and good athleticism and good talent, but he didn't exactly stack, you know, stuff the stat sheet with sacks, tackles for loss, etc. Not terrible, but it wasn't anything where you're seeing this big time production from a defensive tackle. But again, you're looking at traits, you're looking at upside. And to me, Brinson has all of that stuff. Some other notes. I always struggle with defensive tackles to some extent because usually you end up with a really great run defender who doesn't have much juice, can't get upfield, isn't a great pass rusher. Or you end up with a really talented pass rusher, but they don't hold up at the point of attack as a run defender. You also end up in these situations where you watch so many defensive tackles and they just run hot or cold. They aren't always consistent with their effort. Here's the thing with Brinson. I really liked him as a run defender. I love that he has some juice as a pass rusher, and I don't see him take plays off. Now, part of that, again, is because he gets to actually take plays off, meaning there's so much of a rotation there at Georgia, he hasn't had to play a ton of snaps. But I love the fact that his effort's consistent, that he can be a pass rusher to some extent, and that he can be a good run defender as well. Now, maybe he just ends up being a tweener where, like, he's not actually good enough as a run defender, and he's not good enough as a, you know, pass rush specialist, and therefore he doesn't really have a niche or something that you can count on him for. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think he's going to be a good run defender that has a little bit of pass rush ability to him as well, gives good effort and doesn't take plays off. And that's, again, for the sixth round, I will take that. I will absolutely take that. And again, very excited about the potential here and what I was able to see on tape. Per Eric Gulko, who is the Shrine Bowl director, quote, people at Georgia will tell you that over his 5 years at Georgia, he flashed all the talent that his first and second round peers did. I agree. I totally agree. Now, I'm not saying he's a first or second round pick or anything like that. The reason he went a little bit later, but I do think he has these, you know, this upside and this ability to become a very good defensive tackle. And again, I think the fact that he played with so many talented players at Georgia, flew under the radar, was in such a great defensive tackle class, I think flew under the radar. This is a player that if he would have went like third round, you know, based on the tape, would have been aggressive, probably more like maybe a fourth round guy, but 0% chance that this guy should ever last to the sixth round in any normal draft. But because of all the defensive tackles in this one, I can understand why, but I think Green Bay got a really, really great value here in the sixth round. What he can bring to Green Bay in 2025, I would not be shocked or stunned if he ends up being Green Bay's third best defensive tackle this year at some point. I think he can surpass Colby Wooden. I think he can surpass Carl Brooks as a more overall defensive tackle doing a little bit more. I think it could just be Devontae Wyatt and Kenny Clark that are legitimately ahead of him. I think he could find a real significant role within this team if he comes in and plays, you know, and you know, gives the effort that he needs to and plays up to his potential. He can be a really, you know, important player. Again, importance may be a little bit aggressive, but I think he can be a really sound rotational player for this team. And that's not nothing. They needed to hit on something like that. Hopefully they did. I think they did, but we'll see what he can actually become when he gets in games. I think he can give you a lot of run defense snaps. I think he can give you a key piece in that defensive rotation along the defensive line. I think he's got real legitimate developmental upside, the ability to play multiple spots, some good versatility. I think he's a great scheme fit for Jeff Hafley. And he's a modern defensive tackle. We're seeing teams that are less and less wanting these 330, 340 pound guys, although there's still some, Kenneth Grant, and we saw a couple others in this draft, but so many of these teams now want guys that can stop the run, but have a little bit more of that pass rush juice. And the fact that he can rush the passer and I think can become a really good run defender, This is a really smart play again here in the sixth round. So he's a very modern defensive tackle for what teams are currently looking at in the NFL for that position. Some final thoughts. Can't believe they got this guy in the sixth round. Great value. Probably my favorite day three selection based off the tape so far. We'll see what the final two are in Micah Robinson and John Williams. But so far, he's the leader in the clubhouse for my favorite day three selection. Green Bay really needs it too. They really need him to be that rotational defensive tackle or kind of nose tackle behind Kenny Clark. I think he has the opportunity to do it. I'm excited to see what he can do in that spot. He has every right to come in and succeed, play at a high role within this defense, and make an impact. Again, I want to temper expectations. It's a six-round pick. Don't hold your breath. Don't, you know, predict that these guys are going to become good, because normally they do not. But I liked what I saw on tape. I do think there's some potential here. I do think they were smart to kind of understand that, hey, it's a really deep defensive tackle class. We're going to be able to get a good guy later. They got one in the sixth round in Brinson. Now it's up to him to see how good he wants to be and what Green Bay can make of him in this Jeff Hafley defense. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. I always appreciate it. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Razul Douglas Time, Jake Kohner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkle, Sinkle, Jen Wright, Ian Hewell, and Matt Geiger. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.